We announce a special feature of the NBC coverage of the invasion. Tonight at 8:30 over station WNBT, NBC Television will bring you a program featuring H.V. Kaltenborn and a special Signal Corps pre-invasion film. WEAF, New York.
From our NBC newsroom in New York, we take you now to NBC in Washington.
This is Morgan Beatty speaking to you from the radio gallery of the United States Senate in Washington, where it's not exactly business as usual today, although there is a familiar routine in the air. A few moments ago, the presidential buzzer rang, denoting a list of nominations to public office, nominations that are not news on a day like D-Day. The House convened first at 11 o'clock. Instead of the usual prayer, the members themselves stood with heads bowed in silent prayer. Out in the House corridor, they carefully prepared maps of Colonel Lawrence Martin of the Library of Congress for the center of attention. Groups of representatives discussed the invasion, even as you and I. And one representative noticed the direct route to Paris ahead of our forces and said, wouldn't it be fine if they could move right into the capital of France? Speaker Rayburn stopped me on the way over to the Senate gallery to say he couldn't be with us as he had hoped. He has a luncheon date with the president today. Here in the Senate, the session opened at noon, just about a half hour ago, but most senators were in committee meetings. Not more than a handful were on the floor. And for the first time in many a moon, the Senate chaplain, Dr. Frederick Brown Harris, did not have his opening prayer all typed out in advance for the reporters. He spent much more time than the regular period preparing today's message. Here is part of his prayer. We pray today, he said, this day of days for our enemies, with calloused hearts and warped minds and poisoned conceptions. Forgive them. They know not what they do. Bring them to last with purged spirits in the united family of nations. And now, ladies and gentlemen, there are several senators and representatives with us today, and the first of them is Senator Bennett Clark of Missouri, a veteran of the last war, you may remember. He spends most of his time these days working on veterans legislation, legislation for the men who today are going ashore in Europe on the greatest invasion effort of all time. Senator Clark, you know, is author of the GI Bill of Rights, now in the Senate. And while a soldier, incidentally, you may remember that he and Teddy Roosevelt Jr. organized the American Legion. Won't you tell us something about that, Senator Clark, and give us some message for today?
Mr. Beatty, in this moment of destiny, when our boys are jumping off in the greatest military adventure of all time, the American people may have the satisfaction of knowing that our Army comprises the best trained, the best equipped, best armed, best fed, and the best clothed Army that the United States has ever sent into action.
I know we're all glad of that, Senator. Thank you very much, sir. And now I see Congresswoman Claire Booth Luce of Connecticut. She's wearing that new hairdo, by the way, the one with the braids. Mrs. Luce, would you say something for us today?
This is the hour that marks the beginning of the battle for the world. We know that this is the true name for the battle, for if we were to lose it, we'd lose our supreme chance to lead in the councils of peace and to guide our nations towards a brighter destiny. We will win this battle for the world. There's no one in our nation who doubts it, because we know that our arms are strong and our hearts are firm, and there is faith in our souls. In this moment of faith and victory for our arms, I find myself thinking not so much of our men who have crossed the channel or who are still to cross. I'm thinking of the mothers and fathers and wives who wait and listen and wait at home. How heavy and cold is the fear in each heart for the dear one. How time drags and crawls and creeps and yet will not stand still until some news of him, of that one boy, of that one man, comes to you. A mother, or a father, or a woman in love dies a thousand deaths a day waiting and listening. The other women have known the cruel pain of that long vigil that now faces you. They can only tell you this: believe in God, accept his will with love. Your man's fighting well for his country. His weapons are of the best. His leaders in the field are tough and wise. And the one thing that he would want is for you at home to be of good cheer, so that you, in your courage, may set as fine an example as he is setting among his own comrades today in arms.
Thank you, Mrs. Luce. Yours is the honor of interpreting, for all of us, the reactions of mothers throughout the United States. Now I wanted to Senator Alvin Barkley of Kentucky, who has sons in this war, would speak a word to you today.
I'm sure that everybody in the United States, if not everybody in the world, has been thrilled this morning by the news of our invasion of Europe. I feel sure that all of the impatience which may have been exhibited prior to this date will fade when we consider that it has been the duty of our government and of our allied governments to prepare for this invasion to the last man, the last tank, the last airplane, the last round of ammunition, in order that when we made the adventure, we should go forward in it. I can only say, as I feel the same suspense that must be felt by millions of parents all over the United States, we should fervently and devoutly pray deep down in our hearts that the God of justice and of peace may bring victory to our troops and to those of our allies at the earliest possible moment. And I might conclude this brief comment by quoting from an old church hymnal which I learned when I was a boy. This is the hour I long have sought and mourned because I found it not.
Thank you, Senator Barkley. I myself, a veteran of many years on the Hill, not as many as you, of course, have seen this spirit of prayer among the representatives and senators of our nation. It's one of the most inspiring hours of my career on the Hill, at any rate. And now, Senator White of Maine, the minority leader, the leader for the Republicans, the opposition on Capitol Hill on the Senate side. Senator, would you say a word for us today?
Mr. Beatty, this is one of the momentous days in the world's history. It is shadowed with a possibility of disaster, but it has within it the substantial promise of a glorious ending. Wherever the men and the women of our country may be this day, they fight, they work, and they pray for victory, for justice, for peace, with all the blessings which these will bring to the peoples of the earth. We have abiding faith that in his appointed time, God of battles and the God of peace will give triumphant victory to the right and will worst the forces of evil.
Thank you, Senator White of Maine. Ladies and gentlemen, you may be interested to know that our guests here today, most of them, are speaking to you right out of their hearts and minds. They haven't prepared anything. They've just come by the Senate Radio Gallery to speak a word at our request. And now, Senator Lester Hill of Alabama, who you may know is a war veteran and has long been head of the House Military Committee in years gone by. Senator Hill.
Our invasion constitutes the most stupendous military task ever undertaken in all the history of the world. It's not possible for us today to know the infinite preparation, the careful and detailed plans that have been made for this invasion.
Senator, may I interrupt with a bulletin at this time?
Sure. Go ahead, Mr.
We have a bulletin from Supreme Allied Headquarters, Expeditionary Force. It says, our forces have, by evening of this day, gotten over the first 5 or 6 hurdles in the greatest amphibious assault of all time. Now, Senator Hill again.
This is good news that we've made such progress. We can be thankful that we have made such progress. But we must all be prepared for terrific counterattacks that will be made by the Germans. I was speaking of the plans that have been made, the infinite preparation for this invasion. We can't know these plans now, but I think as a member of the Senate Committee on Military Affairs, I can say to the mothers and fathers of our young men and young women who are struggling on the beaches today that our military and naval commanders have taken every possible precaution, have done everything humanly possible to protect and save every life they can, to keep whole every body that they can. Today we salute these heroic young men and young women. And for us it should be an hour of dedication, an hour in which we dedicate ourselves to the one thought and the one purpose, that we here at home will do that which will best support, best sustain, and best back up these heroic young men and young women, and that we will also resolve that we will play our part in the building of a peace so that the sacrifices that our young men and young women are making today will not be made in vain.
Thank you, Senator Hill of Alabama. We've now heard from several of our representatives on the Hill and our senators. The important message, I think, that all of them gave us, the main thing they stressed, is the fact that America goes into this war prepared. I think all of them, pardonably, must be thanked for the effort they made to be sure that the armed services got everything they asked for in the war effort in the last 2 years. Never before in history has so much money been given to the Army and the Navy. Never has so much cooperation and unified spirit moved the efforts of Congress, despite many, many arguments on the sidelines as time went on. Today we've heard Congresswoman Claire Booth Luce speaking for the mothers of the nation, speaking the message that they would have, most of them, if they were here with us today. And now we have a bulletin from London. It says that Hermann Göring has issued an order of the day to the German air forces that the invasion of Western Europe must be fought off, even if it means the death of the Luftwaffe. Ladies and gentlemen, that would seem to be the beginning of preparations for the German counterattack. As Senator Hill told us a few moments ago, we must be prepared for terrific counterattacks by the Germans. They have not yet launched any such attacks. As a matter of fact, most of the congressmen and the senators I've talked to this morning have said, oh, how well it would be if we could only expect them to move right on in there. But we all know it can't be that way. The counterattack is the thing that's coming, and the counterattack in this particular zone of Europe, where the Germans are much closer to supply lines than we are, have not the hurdle of water to cross. That counterattack must be expected. That's why most of the men who spoke to you this morning, who know their map of Europe, who studied specially the strategy of this situation in the European area, they know that great losses are ahead of us in the next few moments. That's all for now from the Capitol in Washington. We return you just a moment. We have a bulletin from London. Kenneth Banghart with a new bulletin.
A bulletin from the NBC newsroom in Washington. It's just been announced in London by Prime Minister Winston Churchill that Allied troops have penetrated several miles inland at some points after landings on the French coast. And now we return you to the NBC newsroom in New York.
Back in the NBC newsroom in New York, and here is Don Goddard with more news flashes.
Winston Churchill has just made a second appearance before the House of Commons in London, and he has had this to say about the events of the day's invasion. He says, "I can state that this operation is proceeding in a thoroughly satisfactory manner." He says this also to members of the House of Commons. "Many dangers and difficulties which this time last night appeared extremely formidable are now behind us. The passage of the sea has been made with far less loss than we apprehended." Those are the words of Winston Churchill speaking before the House of Commons in London at a second meeting today. Mr. Churchill had gone before the House of Commons earlier today and had told of the great armada of ships, the great fleets of airplanes, which we were sending over to secure our beachhead. He told us then, you remember, that the astronomical figure of 11,000 planes had been used, that 4,000 ships were standing in the channel, great warships bombarding the coast where our men were landing. And he said today, later on, coast artillery, that is, the Germans' coast artillery in defense, was far less effective than anticipated. And our headquarters are saying that the invasion was made possible only through the excellent work of minesweepers. Rough weather marked the start of the undertaking, and several landing barges were swamped. The German forces resisting the Allies are believed to be under the command of Nazi Field Marshal Erwin Rommel. The spokesman at headquarters said he expressed the belief that the Germans have between 15,000 and 1,500 and 2,000 fighter planes available when they want to use them against our fleet of 11,000 planes. The Allied High Command revealed today that the invasion of Western Europe originally was scheduled to take place yesterday but had to be postponed for 24 hours because of the bad weather. This is Don Goddard speaking from the NBC Newsroom in New York.
We pause briefly now for station identification.
This is WEAF, New York.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, the National Broadcasting Company takes you across country with stop-offs at other key NBC news points for a roundup of the domestic reaction on this greatest military story of all time. NBC newsmen are now at their microphones in Cleveland, Chicago, Denver, Hollywood, and San Francisco. We shall hear from them in that order. And so, for a close-up of what the nation is thinking and feeling this very momentous day, NBC in New York switches you across the continent. For our first report, we take you to NBC in Cleveland.
This is Edward Wallace in Cleveland. Here in the nation's fifth largest city, the people met the news of invasion with a spirit of quiet determination. Like the rest of the nation, most Clevelanders were asleep when the first word came. But in Cleveland's war plants, the news reached the war workers at the moment it was first announced. Radio loudspeakers brought the first bulletins to them. Work halted briefly. Only a few cheered, but most of them just stood quietly by their lathes, offering a short prayer for the safety and victory of their loved ones. Then back to their vital war jobs with fresh vigor. The same spirit pervades the crowds on Cleveland streets. No cheers or any similar outburst. Here outside the NBC building, for instance, a crowd of men and women has been growing ever since the first word of the invasion came from Europe early this morning. They've been standing there for hours, listening to each bulletin as it comes through the NBC loudspeakers. Their faces are somber, and they are following each development with serious intentness. One woman spoke the mood of most Clevelanders. She's got a boy over in England, a signal corpsman, and it's probable that he was part of the invasion force that stormed ashore on the coast of Normandy. Her reaction to invasion? It's this. I've asked God to give us victory and take care of my son, and I know he will. All over Cleveland and in other parts of Ohio, too, church doors have swung open and the people are taking time out of their day-to-day duties for prayer and meditation. Mayor Lausche of Cleveland was one of the public officials with a special message for the people. Said Lausche, "The command to us is to stand forth and stay at our civilian posts with increased vigor and devotion. We must humbly and solemnly pray for our youth. They are in a gigantic and perilous task and need every bit of help that we can give." And then he attended an early church service before he, too, went to work. Ohio's Governor John Bricker calls today the beginning of the end for the forces of evil. And in the little towns around Cleveland and elsewhere in Ohio, special prayers are being offered up to hasten that end. And in the schools also, the children bowed their heads in special prayers. High up on top of Ohio's tallest building, the railroad terminal tower in Cleveland, a symbol was hoisted today. It's a 30-foot banner of black and gold, flying briskly under the stars and stripes. It was designed by the Cleveland Civilian Defense as a herald of the invasion. It will stay there until the invasion has succeeded. This is Edward Wallace in Cleveland. I switch you now to NBC in Chicago.
This is Alex Dreyer speaking. Chicago's usually noisy loop was calm today. There were no excited groups on street corners, no newsboys shouting the advent of D-Day. Hotel lobbies were strangely silent, and everywhere Chicagoans received the momentous news soberly and with a prayer on their lips. Governor Green of Illinois and Mayor Kelly of Chicago both have proclaimed this a day of prayer. And churches of all denominations are holding special services throughout the day. As early as 5 a.m. Central Time, the bells began pealing their summons for early masses in the Roman Catholic churches. And as dawn was breaking, many men and women in overalls, returning from their work on the night shifts, entered their churches to pray. Brief special prayer services were arranged quickly in many of the larger defense plants. And it was the same throughout the Middle West. The bells of the old cathedral at Vincennes, Indiana, the first church in the Northwest Territory, rang out early this morning. Chicago's spirit of prayerful determination was reflected in other ways, too. Absenteeism in war plants, large and small, fell to a new low, and everywhere workers followed the news of the invasion eagerly, speeding up their work as they did. At the huge Dodge Chrysler plant, largest airplane motor plant in the world, NBC's latest invasion bulletins were posted on the bulletin boards for passing employees to read. To the military in the Chicago area, however, today was just another day in the war, to be devoted, as always, to ordinary duty. At Fort Sheridan, only the guards knew of the attack. The rest of the post slept. And the thousands of sailors at Great Lakes, Illinois, awakened with the usual grumbling of the bugler's call. But they gave forth with cheers and shouting when the mess hall loudspeaker blared out Eisenhower's official announcement that the invasion was finally on. Chicago and the Middle West have taken the news calmly. But the little city of Linton, Indiana, could only sit and wait, because shortly after the invasion flash last night, the power generator in Linton blew out, cutting off all teletypes and radios in the community. The hope of many throughout the Midwest was probably expressed best by a little incident in an all-night Chicago restaurant. Upon hearing the invasion flash, a blonde in a sweeping pale blue formal gown bowed her head in a moment of prayer. And at the next table, a woman said, "Now, Sammy will be back home pretty soon." We take you now to NBC in Denver.
This is Ivan Schooley in Denver. The news of the Allied invasion of Western Europe was taken calmly and quietly in Denver and other sections of the Rocky Mountain region. Since the news came when most people had retired for the night, many were not informed of the invasion until this morning, although sirens were blown in many cities as soon as the Allied command officially confirmed the landings. The siren served as a signal to many churches throughout the area to open church doors for prayers for the success of the Allied operations. Radio stations gave night-long reports on bulletins detailing the early announcements, and many newspapers put out special editions. Switchboards at radio stations were swamped with callers asking if the news was true. In Denver, when the official announcement came, only a few midnight stragglers were on the streets. However, in most hotels, the news electrified guests, although there were no demonstrations. Larry Martin, editor of the Denver Post, in analyzing the importance of this new action, pointed out that the magnitude of the Allied invasion staggers the imagination. He emphasized the fact that United Nations armies had successfully negotiated their first hurdle. However, he warned that the most difficult days are coming. A Denver street cleaner, weighed down by knee-high boots, stopped his work long enough to tell how he felt about the invasion. He said one of his sons is probably in it. He's been in England for months. And the cleaner added, "I'll keep sweeping the streets and let him sweep into Berlin." At Lowry Field, an army base near Denver, Air Force ground school trainees stopped on their way to mess to pray for buddies who might be in the invasion vanguard. Specialty day services were held. Then, the soldiers continued with their regular duties, as did military personnel at other camps. Across the Continental Divide in Salt Lake City, the invasion news was received calmly, and the man on the street seemed little surprised. Everyone apparently has just been waiting for the big push to start. Persons interviewed were unanimous in predicting success for the Allied expeditionary forces. Response to the word of the satisfactory progress of the landings in France was highlighted in war plans by comments in the Denver factories making landing craft. Workers expressed the hope that landing boats they had a part in making were in on the big event. Although there was tremendous interest in news of the invasion, war workers stuck to their jobs and worked with increased enthusiasm. And those are the highlights in the Rocky Mountain region of the response to announcement of the invasion of Europe. This is Ivan Schooley in Denver. Now to NBC in Hollywood.
First, we have a late bulletin from the Berlin radio. Berlin has just admitted that the beachhead on the European shores has been further widened. Local reaction in Southern California was what you'd expect of any American community. No hysterical rejoicing, pretty calm and quiet on the whole. No apathy, certainly not that, but a dignified and solemn acceptance of news awaited a long time. The impulse is definitely toward prayer, the general feeling, anxiety for the men who have history's toughest job. The three questions on everybody's lips are, how are we doing, where are we doing it, and what about casualties? Quite a few people went to church this morning who haven't been to church in a long time, and special services are scheduled throughout the day. Grown-ups, pretty solemn about it all, are hanging close to their radios wherever possible.
When the first news broke at war plants in Los Angeles, including Lockheed and Douglas, the workers cocked an ear to the announcement and then redoubled their efforts to turn out flames. Their feeling is one of tremendous responsibility. They've got a personal interest in those 11,000 planes which are covering the invasion attack. And in the back of most everybody's mind in this area is the thought, every mile closer to Berlin means we're another mile closer to Tokyo, too. Even the children have that idea. One little girl awoke to the blare of neighborhood loudspeakers and asked, "What's all the noise about, Mother? Have we got those Japs where they belong?" A number of Southern Californians slept through the whole thing. There weren't many reports of sirens and ringing of bells. Most Hollywood streets show either people with bloodshot eyes, the ones who've had their ears glued to a loudspeaker all night, or those with a quicker step who received the momentous news upon awakening this morning. All faces, tired and rested, show relief from tension. In studio language, the typical Hollywood reaction was a double take. People heard the news and then about 2 minutes later came up with startled faces and shouted, "Huh? What?" Here in Hollywood, one Marine who had just won a nightclub jitterbug contest, and all he said when he heard of the invasion announcement was, "I feel kind of silly." Most folks seem to feel that way who didn't have some kind of part to play, such as aircraft workers have in this community. We're all thinking about those planes which have come off Southern California's assembly lines and which now are darkening the skies over Hitler's Europe. The prayers of this part of the coast are riding the wings of the planes our workers built, the planes our sons are flying into that inferno over there. All we can say is Godspeed and God bless our boys. This is NBC in Hollywood. We take you now to NBC in San Francisco.
This is Larry Smith speaking from San Francisco. I have just returned from a tour of the restaurants, the streets, and a short ride on a trolley car taking war workers to their jobs. To most San Franciscans, the invasion of the European continent was several hours old when they received the first word, because we're 3 hours late getting up, the New Yorkers and the East Coast residents. But now, everywhere in this great port of embarkation, the funnel through which the tools of war and the men to work them flow into the far reaches of the Pacific, there seems to be one calm but understandable reaction. That is, that this is the first step toward the day when the full might of the Allies can be hurled against our other mutual enemy, Japan. It's an understandable reaction because the men in uniform here are headed for New Guinea, for the Philippines, at least someplace across the Pacific where they will face the Japanese. A leathery-faced Marine, campaign ribbons filling three rows above his breast pocket, turned to me and said, "Well, it had to happen, so what's all the shooting about? Didn't General Eisenhower say that it would be over in 1944? A young girl aboard the car, a girl in the metal hat of a shipyard worker, started to sob. Her husband is a paratrooper somewhere in England. That's where his last letter came from. Today, he's perhaps somewhere in France. A Chinese smiled. He saw in the defeat of Hitler the transfer of Allied power to help his staggering home. And Chinatown leaders started early this morning to build up a record sale of invasion bonds next week to speed the day of liberation for their country. An elderly woman stood up in the streetcar to announce proudly, "My boy is with General Eisenhower's forces. He'll be in the fight." Almost everyone saw the invasion of Hitler's European fortress as a forerunner of a stepped-up war against the Japanese. And that, too, is understandable, because the Pacific coast faces the enemy to the west rather than to the east. There is a general feeling that Russia will now enter the war against the Japs, that Stalin will grant the United States air bases, that we will invade the Kuril. Wild rumors run rampant, but beneath the surface, the reaction was simply, "Let's go, General Eisenhower, because the quicker the defeat of Hitler, the quicker we can get at Hirohito." Yes, San Franciscans this morning feel they can hear the sizzling of that rising sun of Japan as it sinks into the torrent of righteous justice and retribution. They see the day when the Pacific will again be the Pacific.
We return you to the NBC newsroom in New York.